Magiswad for Business, and I'm joined by Dr. Georgina Pujol Busquets from Spain. Dr. Busquets, please tell me, what is your background?
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. So yes, I'm from Barcelona, Spain. I'm a pharmacist. That's what I did for my bachelor. And after my bachelor, I studied my master's in nutrition and public health. And then I did another master in global health, so international health, to have a broader view of what is public health. After that, I don't know why, but basically I chose South Africa. And this is a question that a lot of people ask me, like, why South Africa? You're from Spain. I don't know. I think it was like the furthest place. I really wanted to be around and a unique context. And I think that South Africa had that like special thing of like, you know, diverse cultures. Such a unique context. So I came to South Africa to work for Tim Noakes, for the Noakes Foundation. Yes. I did an internship there. And after that, I got offered a research grant to do my PhD, and I stayed. And this was 5 years ago.
And your PhD was in the effects of low carbohydrate, high fat diets on low income households in South Africa. Tell me about that.
When I first joined the Noakes Foundation, they were running nutrition education programs in low income communities or townships around Cape Town. At that point, they were, I think they ran like around 10 interventions. I joined one of the interventions in a community called Atlantis, which is like an hour away from Cape Town. And basically they were teaching people how to improve their diets and following the recommendations and following the guidelines of what is a low carb, high fat diet. So basically reducing refined carbs, refined vegetable oils, and refining simple sugars. And basically they were trying to, with this advice, improve dietary behaviors and also see what were the metabolic health outcomes of it. So we know from like clinical trials and stuff, you know, that this diet works, especially for diabetes, hypertension. So it helps with people that are either becoming insulin resistant or they are already insulin resistant. And actually what we wanted to see is this actually something that can work in unique settings like low-income communities. So when I first joined the Noakes Foundation, I was involved in these programs, and that's where I got the idea for my PhD. For my project, I only target women. They have higher rates of metabolic health diseases, and especially death because of metabolic health diseases. So we really wanted to explore what are the reasons of that.
And did you find that your studies suggested that there is scientific evidence supporting the hypothesis that LCHF diets may be effective for treating non-communicable diseases?
From the evidence that we have already, yes. What we found in our study, people improve a lot of health outcomes and kind of like could maintain them throughout a whole year, which obviously it's always one of the best outcomes that you can find, you know, that the benefits are going to be sustainable because there's no point of like improving people's health and then after 1 year and the health go back to where it was. So we could see that HbA1c, which is like a health marker that helps you to see if someone is getting insulin resistant, was improving throughout the whole year. Also waist circumference, they reduce waist circumference, weight as well, also blood pressure, which kind of like aligns with the findings from other studies. There's a lot of aspects that influence food, you know, like culture, tradition, and the way your ancestors used to eat, what sorts of food they used to eat, like, I don't know, especially with like really tasty, amazing foods that, you know, South Africa has, like desserts and stuff like that, which can be like really high in sugar and stuff. So also providing them with alternatives to that, you know, alternatives to flours, alternatives to bread, and also helping them within their own budget of like, you know, everyone has different budgets for shopping and stuff. So, okay, with this amount of money, what can you buy that can like help you sustain these dietary behaviors, you know? So definitely I think we showed that this diet is sustainable. And I feel like sometimes people, when they hear about low carb, high fat, because I've been asked this question so much, you know, like, how are you gonna ask people that, you know, are struggling and they have like financial constraints and stuff, especially in South Africa, where, you know, it's the country with the highest inequality in the world. How are you gonna ask these people to eat this way? But I mean, really, we're just helping them and giving them the advice of like eating real food. Mm. It's not eating, you know, a fancy bread that is branded with like low carb or whatever. It's just basically like, okay, this is the real food. Let's go back to eat real food.
I spoke to Dr. Mark Kukuzela last week, and he said that in South Africa, protein, which is sort of the most cherished micronutrient, it's really neglected in low-income households. Is it because it's financially unattainable to keep that as part of your diet, or what would you suggest to South Africa's government if they were to aid low-income households in terms of getting the right amount of protein to the citizens?
So I think definitely access and affordability are aspects that are, you know, important to consider. But also I feel like in general with like animal protein, there's like a huge confusion in like the scientific community. You know, we've been like bombarded with this news about like, you know, red meat is causing cancer, whatever. So like I remember like interviewing people at the baseline at that point that they didn't know anything about low carb or whatever, and I was asking them like, what is a healthy diet? And they were like, whole grains, and you know, don't eat meat, don't eat salt and whatever. And I mean, actually what we know now that there's certain types of assumptions or links between like meat and cancer or like other diseases that are actually not real or not like cannot be generalized, you know. And certain populations, like population that is like a population of people that are suffering and metabolic diseases and stuff, they would benefit like so much from actually getting like really like good sources of animal protein. Organ meats are amazing. And also like fat from meat. Mm. We've been told so many times, remove the fat from chicken, remove the skin, remove, you know, don't eat that fat, worse. Now we already know like this is like healthy fat, you know. This is actually something that we need. Fat is something that we need. Exactly. Some people are like, oh, how are you going to ask people to eat high fat? But we're not telling them eat like a burger with the bread and it has to be greasy or whatever. No, we're talking about like good fats, like nuts, avocados, olive oil or avocado oil, and also the fat of the meat, you know, the fat of the pieces of the meat that you're buying, like don't remove that. Mm. So, yeah, I feel like at the end it would be, it's a mix of, from governments try to incentivize people eating meat and like kind of like taking the fear out of it. Like, I'm not saying we have to eat meat every single meal, but like, you know, just reintroduce it.
Just to close off with, at the shortly after lockdown implemented in South Africa in March 2020, the government distributed food parcels to low-income households. So I'm just going to read the contents of those food parcels. It was starch-rich foods, 10 kilograms of maize meal and 5 kilograms of rice, protein source foods, so 1 kilogram of soya, 2 tins of baked beans, 2 tins of fish and 880 grams of peanut butter, 2 liters of cooking oil, 1 packet of tea bags, 2.5 kilograms of sugar and 1 kilogram of salt. So what is the effect of this kind of diet on your immune system?
We're already seeing the effect. Whoever wrote this list was not properly like advised, or like they didn't do like a proper research, especially with COVID. Worse, yes, we know already, and we know from the beginning that is so linked to metabolic conditions. Like people, there's higher rates of death when someone had an existing metabolic condition, you know. And I'm not even talking about like something that was diagnosed, but if you were like pre-diabetic, for instance, you know, that it can just be that you have like a high waist circumference, which is literally like you are at risk of developing a disease, you know. Those people were already like at a higher rate of death or like complications or whatever. That's again, I say about the confusion. It's very controversial and problematic to actually consider those foods essential, you know, because it's like, what are you trying to do here? It's a very complete and complicated issue, of course, because those foods are the cheapest. And I guess that's the problem, you know, but those foods are the ones that the government like and put like less taxes and stuff like that. There's like bigger food companies around that, bigger brands, you know. So obviously there's a lot of aspects around like corruption. Who is deciding this food? Who is getting benefits out of this food? But like at the end, who is there? Who is the person that is eating this food? Like probably someone that is already becoming metabolically healthy will be end up getting diagnosed for a chronic disease, will end up having to take medication every single day, maybe end up not being able to work because of that. And that creates a huge burden within their household. And, you know, it's a cycle. Mm. So it's the cycle of poverty, which obviously health is really involved. And I feel like during COVID, that's one of the things that we realized the most, you know, like who in crisis, in like really hectic situations, who can thrive and like survive and who cannot because of, you know, what is available to these people. And obviously, with the Eat Better South Africa program, one of the goals is everyone is free to decide whatever they want to do with their money and whatever they have, but at least knowledge has to be available to everyone. Yes,
and they've been educated by the Nux Foundation.
Exactly. And once you have this information, you go and you do whatever you want with it. This information that so many people think like, oh, this is available for everyone. Of course, everybody knows, but it's not true. Not everybody knows, especially when you work with communities where in rural areas, like there's a high percentage of people that they don't even know how to read. And that's the reality.